I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our writer and culture critic Jimmy Israel. He joins us in our Washington, D.C. studio. Also here in D.C., Dave Zirin. He is the sports editor at the progressive magazine The Nation. In New York City today, Fernando Vila. He is the managing editor of Univision News in English. And joining him in New York and new to the shop, William Roden, sports columnist with the New York Times. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
What's up, Jimmy?
Right,
how are you?
Going?
Great
right.
to be here.
Fernando, my dude, good to have you back.
You too, brother. You tweeting still?
Bill Roden, first time in.
Yes, sir. How much do you charge? But we didn't ask that. How much for the shape? That's a big thing.
We'll be paying you.
If you survive, you'd be doing well. Thanks for coming in, and we hope to have you in again. All right, everybody. Well, let's get things started. Hold on. We got to get things started with the Olympic theme, right? Hold on.
Well, there goes one myth destroyed.
I got that from Neil. Yeah, Neil Conan taught me that when I was in the cafeteria, so shout out to Neil. You know, it's all Olympics all the time in the barbershop with the Summer Games getting started in London. And while most of the competition happens after the opening ceremony, soccer or football, you know, started this week earlier. All right, that's not quite as good as mine. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I think we get it.
Show me the pool.
Right. You know what, Fernando? I got you up. You're going first, right? Your beloved Spain lost to Japan yesterday. Oh, 1-0. You doing
it was
okay?
Awful. It was awful. It was one of the worst games I've seen them play in years. I mean, it was just. I mean, they should have lost 5-0. I mean, they were lucky to lose only 1-0. It was one of the worst performances I've seen in a long time. I mean, just embarrassing.
Wow, I'm sorry to hear that, man. It's like I guess it's like being a Browns fan, but you know, me personally,
not that bad.
Shout out to Cleveland. I love you, WCPN. I'm looking forward to the paddle boating. I mean, the kayak, the canoe sprint. You know, wait, guys. I'm sorry. Am I alone? That some of these sports might even seem a little silly as Olympic events. Is that just me, Bill Roden?
Oh, you kidding me? I'm looking forward to badminton.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, what about tug of war? It was cut back in the 1920s, right? Is it high time it came back? What about club swinging?
Ballroom dancing? No, I mean, you know, a lot of the stuff can't be. I mean, I'm a chess guy, you know, maybe see chess, but you do have to draw a line at some point. But, you know, interesting, I joked about badminton. But I've covered a few Olympics, and when you see any of these sports, like back covered, in fact, Fernando and I was just talking about that. When you see some of this stuff played at the highest level, you can never go to the backyard again to play badminton.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you know, maybe there'll be Olympic flip flopping. We can get a John Kerry to come over, or Mill Romney. Anyway, I'm sorry, Dave Zirin, go ahead,
just,
man.
First of all, to say that I absolutely agree with Bill. I mean, to see any sport played at the highest level is an absolute thrill. But I do draw the line at a very simple rule. If you're doing something that you could either gain weight or smoke cigarettes while doing, it's not a sport, and it doesn't belong in the Olympics. Like badminton, you can't do that. But, you know, like Bill said, chess, I don't know. You could smoke some Newports, some Pall Malls, play some chess. That's not a sport.
Wait, Dave Z, why can't you smoke cigarettes and play
baseball?
I know. Well, if you're a pitcher, you can smoke baseball.
No, that's beer league softball, which is not a sport, but baseball is.
What about competitive eating? Competitive eating? Hold on.
I think you're all taking this
competitive
all
eating is coming into your own.
Jimmy, yeah, I'm sorry. Could we please bring this? Excuse me. Could we please bring this back to the fact that many of these fine young people have trained for many years to be here? Could we show a little respect? Could we do that?
There you go.
Could we do that?
Okay,
thank you.
Fine.
Fernando, excuse me. Can I mention you are actually feeling badminton because you spent some time in China, right? And
yes,
you've actually seen it played at a very high level.
I've actually tried to play it, and I don't recommend it to anyone. That little feather is a treacherous temptress. It kind of floats in front of you, waiting to be smacked, and then it disappears. It's brutal.
But on a serious note, so what's everybody's favorite sport? Seriously, what are you going to watch? Dave, what are you watching? What are you most interested in?
I'm very excited about the swimming. I love it. Every 4 years, it's thrilling. Men's, women's. I just love the drama of the pool, especially now that they have the cameras underneath and can really show it in that kind of new age 21st century kind of way.
Mm-hmm. Boxing. Boxing. I'm that dude.
Really? Mm-hmm. Both men's and women's, or just?
Both men's and women's until they get Olympic Zumba. I'm gonna be the boxing.
Oh, okay, Bill. Do you have a favorite?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to me, there's nothing like being in this stadium for the 100 meters, men, women. I mean, that to me is one of the most exciting things in sports. Period. The 100 meters. World's fastest human. That's always been it for me.
Yeah, Mickey Rourke is the favorite this year.
Yeah. I want to see Usain Bolt break the sound barrier. I mean, it could be done.
Did I leave
anybody else? Fernando? Who did I leave? Did I leave anybody?
I'm excited to see the Dream Team, to see if they live up to the 92 team. That's what I'm going to be watching.
The basketball team?
Well,
the men's basketball.
That strains almost. To me now, we start, segueing into nationalism. Mm. You know, the whole idea of the Dream Team, I mean, to me, that's when the United States crossed the line and they sent in the Marines. That's essentially what the presence in the Olympics meant. They, you know, we were angry because, you know, we lost. We got the silver. So, you know, beginning in Barcelona, we sent in the Marines. You know, we wanted to just blast the competition. So now, you know, they the rest of the world gradually caught up with the Marines, remember, in Athens.
Yep.
You know, they caught up. So now we're sending in the Navy SEALs. And the problem becomes, what happens when they catch up to the Navy SEALs? Then who do we send?
Yeah. But wasn't, I don't know.
What's wrong with elevating the level of competition? What's wrong with that?
Well, I think it gets back to exploitative labor, and I'm sure Dave will chime in.
Ooh,
on
me?
This. Remember, first, we were sending our cheap labor. We were sending the college kids, okay? You know, we're letting them sort of do the heavy lifting, you know, and we could do it. We could send these kids, you know, they're just happy to be there. They're kind of grateful. And then, you know, people start beating up on them. So, okay, now let's kind of send in the pros. And then once we introduce that type of capitalism, they're stunned when this year Dwayne Wade and Ray Allen said, well, wait a minute. You know, it was fine in 92. We did it for free, but this is very time-consuming. I think we should get paid.
Yeah, John Carlos, the 1968 Olympian, who I know Bill is very familiar with, who raised his black love fist in Mexico City, he says, you know why they have the Olympics every 4 years? Because it takes them 4 years to count all the money.
it is a big
money-making enterprise.
Right.
And Bill's absolutely right. The Dream Team is part that, plus the advent of corporate sponsorship, is what has propelled the Olympics from something that was a money-losing proposition to something that's become like a neoliberal Trojan horse. Mm.
Right. In fact, it's interesting. Fernando was talking about bemoaning the fact that Spain, the Spanish national team, lost. But in reality, one of the best Spanish private corporate teams could probably beat the national team.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably where we're going to be headed in maybe 40 years. These are probably going to be corporate Olympics, where you're not going to have national teams anymore.
Interesting.
Like Blade Runner or something.
Well, speaking of the fact that there are kind of widely ranging levels of sophistication and of athletes participating in these games. And if you just joined us, we're having our weekly visit to the barbershop with writer Jimmy Israel, sports editor Dave Zirin, sports columnist William Roden, and journalist Fernando Vila. We're talking about the fact that, Jimmy, apparently one Olympian missed your warning a couple of weeks ago about staying off the Twitter.
Vula, that last name, Papa Christou. Wow. You know what? Initially, she dismissed the criticism about her with that unfortunate tweet. But now she's kind of issued an apology, and you know, for what she called a tasteless joke.
Well, let me just bring people up to date if they missed this. She's a very popular athlete in her home country of Greece. She competes in the triple jump, but earlier this week she was expelled from Greece's national team for a social media post which she wrote on her Twitter page. This is how it's been translated into English: "With so many Africans in Greece, the West Nile mosquitoes will be getting home food."
That's
so.
Yeah.
Wow.
I guess so the question
is... Greek stand-up comedy isn't what it used to be.
Right. But I'm pumped. Bill Roden, you know what? After Vula was suspended, she told Reuters her main emotion was bitterness and that her punishment was excessive. Do you agree?
No, are you kidding me?
Tell us what you really think.
No. I mean, and I think this kind of gets into the larger thing about we have to find a way to begin to rein in carelessness and recklessness. You know, and in particularly, you're going to the Olympics. The one moment in our just sort of abysmal history of global conflict, this is supposed to be the one, you know, couple of weeks where we at least have the illusion of nations getting together, and you're going to start off with this kind of nonsense, you know, which means, number one, you don't even study the Olympic Charter, you know. So, no, I mean, it wasn't harsh. In fact, she should probably even never be allowed to be on the Greek national team anymore.
Okay. Anybody disagree? Yep.
Dave Zirin.
Well, it's not so much that I disagree, but I think we should realize this is as much a Greek domestic political issue more than it's an International Olympic Committee issue. It was the Greek Olympic Committee, independent of the IOC, that pulled her home. That's a very political body, the Olympic Committee. It's appointed by politicians. Mm. And I think the real tipping point was less the joke and more when people went through her Twitter history. It was found that she is an avid right. supporter of this organization, Golden Dawn, which has 7% of the parliament. It's an open fascist, open Nazi organization, and that's the third rail of Greek politics right now. And now she is a folk hero. She is on the homepage of Golden Dawn's website. She is their martyr. She is their spokesperson. So she's actually been elevated politically by this whole imbroglio. And I just got to say, the great irony of this is that there is such a history of fascism in the Olympics in terms of the organizers, in terms of Avery Brundage, right. who headed the Olympics, in terms of the 36 Olympics in of course, Berlin's Nazi Germany under the auspices of Adolf Hitler. So it only took them till the 21st century, but it's good to see somebody get sent home for fascism.
Well, they call themselves nationalists, I'll just right. for whatever that means.
Bill Roden?
The political party is one thing. I mean, you know, that's one thing. Racism is racism, though.
Well,
you know, I mean, I don't care. You know, the political party is one thing. Who you're affiliated with, that's fine. That's what you do. But you have to keep your racism to yourself.
Well, you know, speaking of the R word, Bill Roden, do you remember, how many of you remember this particular comment? Here it is.
I'm telling you that the black is the better athlete, and he practices to be the better athlete, and he's bred to be the better athlete because this goes back all the way to the Civil War.
And do you all remember this? That was the former sports commentator Jimmy the Greek Snyder.
Well, the Greeks are having a rough time on the barbershop.
I know, right? I thought about that, but that's how he was known. I couldn't right. not say it. And he was fired in 1988 by CBS for those remarks. But recently, though, the Olympic gold medalist, African-American Michael Johnson, echoed that sentiment. He told the Daily Mail that he believes that people of African heritage in the diaspora will dominate the London Olympics in part because of the slave ancestry and what that, you know, produced. And so I just have to ask you all, what about that? Is that a worthy topic of conversation or not? I don't know. Bill Roden, you wrote the book, The $40 Million Slaves, The Rise, Fall, and Redemption of the Black Athlete. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I think that, yeah, they're going to dominate because, you know, the slavery connection, they're pissed off. but listen, I'm not a geneticist. Maybe some of the people on our panel are. I'm not. But this is what I will say, though, is that I think that I always felt that as African Americans, we have a survival, a psychic, spiritual survival gene, and that the history of us in this country is surviving. It's not necessarily genetics and race. It's how we relate to racism. So I'll leave everybody else to argue about genetics. But I'm just, you know.
I hear you. What about Fernando? What do you think?
Well, I feel like this is we have to be very careful about this. I mean, again, we're not scientists either, and sort of assigning the percentages of success, you know, whether it's race or upbringing or socioeconomic status, is always going to be inexact and very problematic. I think the big issue is sort of if we are sort of just to have this conversation, sort of addressing the subtle racism that always exists in team sports and in sort of what positions you're supposed to play if you're a certain race and how sort of pernicious that can be once you start addressing these topics and. Mm.
It is very limiting, isn't it? It's this is what you're supposed to do because of this or that other thing. It's so interesting. Like, for example, earlier in the program, we heard from an Olympic, you know, rower who is not at all from kind of to the manor born, and who's the top of his sport. And I don't know. There is that. Dave, what do you think?
Junk science. the worst kind of sociobiological, social Darwinistic, deeply racist science that has its roots in the white supremacist movement of the 19th century. I think it should be rejected. Yes, it's certainly true that people of certain backgrounds gravitate towards different sports. I would argue that's entirely socially constructed. And you want to know the best proof of that? Look at the number of European players who are now stars in the National Basketball Association. I mean, for a long time, it was like, oh, well, black people are the best basketball players because genetics, blah, blah, blah. People made those arguments in the 1970s and 1980s. But then you go to Europe where there's less of that baggage doesn't exist in the same way where, oh, you're only supposed to play this sport and not this sport, and people are able to come over and compete. So the idea of social construction
is very important. The early history of the sport has how many of the standouts in the early history of basketball
Irish
were
and Eastern, Jews.
Were, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there's that piece. But Jimmy, final thought on this?
Well, I mean, I don't see it as a race issue so much as, I mean, it's one of those conversations that good white people aren't supposed to have. You know, what black people say all the time, it's like, look, listen, my great-grandfather, he was born with wide shoulders, you know, because he comes from a farm background. You know, my grandfather, also born with wide shoulders. My dad, wide shoulders. Me, I'm wide-shouldered. You know, am I built for football? No, but I'm built for something physical. You know, if your people are farmers, or if you're from a colonized people and your people were used as labor, it makes sense that those genes are going to come down the pool. So I don't think it's so much that right. You know, blacks or blacks or African people were you know, because they're not smart or they do sports. I think they just physically they just have a better musculature.
Well, how come you can't keep your houseplants alive?
Michelle.
Yes, sir. 19 seconds.
Say, 19 seconds? Well, maybe not. This is a kind of longer point.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll come back to it some other time if it warrants. Well, thank you for coming, Bill Roden.
Oh, the pleasure is mine. Now, you know, very few barbershops I've been to where you have a beautiful sister cutting hair.
Well, you haven't traveled enough, Bill Roden.
You need to get out more.
Sports columnist for the New York Times.
So
also with us, Fernando Vila, managing editor of Univision News in English. He was also in our New York bureau. Jimmy Israel's a writer and culture critic. He's also an adjunct professor of film and social media at Cuyahoga Community College here in D.C. Also in D.C., Dave Zirin, sports editor for The Nation and host of Sirius XM Radio's Edge of Sports Radio. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
My privilege. Tweet on, Jimmy.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.